I often would say when I was on the board, they don't care about the farmers. It just dawned on me one day. It was like, they don't care about the farmers. And then I looked through the papers and there was nothing in the papers where I saw that would give them the authority to say, we care for the farmers. Like the USDA NRCS says, we care for the conservation of the land or the whatever. Okay, but USDA NOP doesn't say we care for the farmers and their organic farmers, you know? And I was so surprised to not be able to find that. And had there been such a statement, I think maybe we would not be viewed as adversaries sometimes when we want to say a truth for organic farming and for organic farmers.
Welcome to the Real Organic Podcast. I'm Lindley Dixon, the co-director of the Real Organic Project. We're a grassroots, farmer-led movement with an add-on organic food label to distinguish soil-grown crops and pasture-raised livestock under the organic seal. You just heard from Jennifer Taylor. She's a real organic farmer from Georgia and professor at Florida AMU. She is also on the Real Organic Standards Board. Jennifer won a 2019 Organic Pioneer for Farming Award from the Rodale Institute, and she was also named Florida's Woman of the Year in Agriculture in 2020. She also served on the National Organic Standards Board, which you'll hear her discuss in this interview. And she was recently elected to serve as an IFOAM board member. That stands for International Federation of Organic Agricultural Movements. This woman is busy. She's also farming in Georgia. Her farm is named after her grandmother, who was once a sharecropper, who ended up purchasing the same land that Jennifer's now farming on. Let's return to the conversation between my co-director, Dave Chapman, and Real Organic Standards board member, Jennifer Taylor.
So welcome to the Real Organic Podcast. And my guest today is Jennifer Taylor, my friend and somebody that I've done a lot of work with over the last 5 years. And before we start, Jennifer, let me just tell people you are co-owner of Lola's Organic Farm with your husband, Ron Gilmore. And Lola's Organic Farm is a pilot farm in the Real Organic Project. Mm-hmm. So you were one of the first 60 farms certified in the country down in Georgia. Mm-hmm. Jennifer is a PhD who teaches at the standards, at the associate professor at the Florida A&M University's College of Agriculture and Food Sciences. I got to list a few of these things, Jennifer. You were Florida Agriculture's Woman of the Year in 2019. You were recognized by Rodale Institute as an organic pioneer in 2019. You're a former board member of the National Organic Standards Board, and you are vice president of the Organic Farmers Association Governing Council. Wow. So you have been working awfully hard for all of us. You have a life spread between, I just got to meet your son, which is wonderful. And so you got family and you farm and you teach and you're an advocate, you're an activist. So that's a lot of hats that you're wearing. I get the feeling that you're pretty busy.
I am pretty busy and enjoying it though. So it's a different kind of situation.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, good. Well, a lot of your work involves organic farming. How did you come to be an organic farmer or a farmer at all?
That's an interesting story, and I've been trying to piece together the idea of how this happened myself. I am coming from a farming background, you know, in that my mother was raised on a farm. Her mother started out as a sharecropper, but I'm told her family was also a family of farmers. On my father's side, they had, they were mainly fishermen, but, my grandmother there also had a family garden, you know, where she would grow. And, however, when I decided to, to go to Florida A&M University, I decided to study agronomy. And I was really interested in that definition, that interrelationship between the soil and the plants. That was kind of like interesting to me, you know? And so I went on to further my studies that way, but I think the primary emphasis my grandmothers, or both of my grandmothers, and the attitude and the enjoyment that they had in farming, for one, that's on the farm where we are, and then my father's mother also, for the gardening that she did in care of her family. And let me tell you, I must tell you this, my mother would get us up early in the morning looking for farmers and produce from farmers to make her food. She was all into fresh food and fresh vegetables and fresh eggs and getting butter and all this, and making butter, you know, for her homemade cakes, which she wanted to be totally from scratch. And she was excellent cook and enjoyed every moment of it. That's my mother. So I had that kind of background too, looking for farmers in the back roads. She knew where they were, okay? She'd find them and get this fresh produce for her daily meals as well as her weekend.
All right. Mm-hmm. So you were connected to food very growing much. Up. That was very much part of your life. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in Georgia?
I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida.
All right. And,
however, my grandmother, both of them were in Georgia. So the one that was farming, we would go and visit, as you visit a grandmother, you know.
Yeah.
And she would also come to us. But when she would come, she would bring boxes and baskets full of produce from her harvest at the farm. Sugar cane and cane syrup and smoked meats and all kinds of greens and peas and tomatoes, all kinds of vegetables and produce that she was harvesting from her farm. She would bring to us people in the city who were suffering badly from not having all of this fresh produce, right?
Yeah.
So it was a joy to have her come. And
yeah,
share.
Yeah. So that's Lola? That was your grandmother, Lola?
Yes.
Yeah. And you named your farm after her.
Yes.
It was her farm before, right?
It was her farm. It is exactly where she farmed. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yeah, that is.
She was farming, though. It was like to me, in my memory, a magnificent enterprise. Okay, she had all kinds of fruit trees and nut trees and all kinds of animal production, ducks, and one period she had goats as well, and turkeys, and all kinds of vegetables. And she also eventually started growing tobacco as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, you say that earlier in her life she was a sharecropper?
She was.
So can you describe to a poor northern boy what that means? Because I hear the term sharecropping. Mm-hmm. I have a dim idea, and I'm sure a lot of people who will listen to this only have a dim idea. What was the system of sharecropping? What does that mean?
And I only know it from the stories that they told to me, okay?
Yeah.
So, from my mother's telling of her life as a sharecropper, as a child and in the home, a portion of the produce of the earnings of the land would go towards the owner of the land. And they didn't own the home where they lived. They lived on the land of the landowner in his home. And the house wasn't in good condition with, you know, space. You could see the sky at night. My mother would say they'd lay in bed and look at the stars. You know, they could see the stars through the holes in there. And, you know, and air could shoot through the house because it wasn't well put together. And that wasn't the care of the landowner to have that care for the people working with him or for him. So my grandmother was given an opportunity to buy land. And my mother said that she worked, my grandmother worked so hard that year, and they making contributions as children do. But my grandmother worked so hard that year, baking foods for others, cleaning people's houses, cooking for people, raising money from the any extra money, you know, from the farm, the sharecrop farm that they were sharing. And then also my grandmother did moonshine too. So that really contributed to it. Probably get up and go, but that really contributed, my mother said, a lot to this, you know, having the money available when the landowner came and they actually had the money available. So my grandmother was able to, first she had the vision. How in the world did she have the vision to move her family in this opportunity to move her family from that where they were as sharecroppers to own, to land ownership, you know? And that just changed the whole dynamic of living for them, where she became a landowner. She became a resource provider, so to speak, as a farmer for the community. And in the sharing of the food that she was growing and the cooking and preparing, she participated in that as well. And I can imagine for her, it was just a new, exciting opportunity to move from sharecropping family to now a landowner.
Yeah, was that, do you think that was unusual at that time? Was that something that didn't happen so much?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. This is just, I have no idea how frequent that was.
Right. Well, it was a big deal for her, obviously. So she kept farming that land her whole life?
Yes. She kept farming it and enjoyed the farming of it. She had a whole life circle around that farm of friends, of cooking and eating and sharing and growing, you know, and telling us stories about the sharing and the growing, you know, and my mother telling us stories about the sharing and the growing as we were growing up that was happening on that little farm, you know. My grandmother also had some cows that she called her milk cows, you know, cows to make her, get her milk and her butter, you know, for her cakes or her biscuits, whatever she was doing. And so she had the practice of letting the cows go into the forest area. You know, that was a part of how she managed. Calling them, she would call them and the cows would come running through the woods, you know. But she'd say, Suki, Suki, and they'd come running through the woods. But these are all stories that my grandmother shared with us, as well as my mother, about life on the farm. Now, they said it was hard work. You know, it was hard work. And my grandmother said it was hard work, but it wasn't, she wouldn't leave it at that point. She'd say it was hard work, but she loved it. It was hard work, but it was enjoyable. It was hard work, but look at all this beautiful produce we have. And guess what? You have some too, and we're sharing it with you, you know? So it's never that a point of ending on the hard work for her, right?
Yeah. By the way, I remember as a kid, I grew up on a dairy farm, and I remember also going, Suki, okay. Getting the cows to come. So that was the same in Pennsylvania. So how did you come to be a farmer on this land? I mean, you know, you had left, you grew up in Florida.
Yes. So, you know, it kind of turned out that way. That wasn't my first vision. My first vision was that I wanted to work with farmers always. I wanted to work with farmers, but I wanted to do it outside of the country. And I had, you know, in agronomy, you select a crop. You select, and my crops were sorghum and millet. So I'm looking at dry land agricultural strategies in India, China, South America, where sorghum and millet are grown. And I had a professor, and he was like, Jennifer, there's farmers here in the States. Why would you go? Why do you want to go? And I hadn't even thought of it that way, you know. At the time, I'm into this agronomic learning thing, you know, this compartmental learning. So I'm like, okay. But what happened was that my dissertation was actually about identifying needs of small-scale farmers around the world, the global impact and needs around the world. And it also looked at the implemented projects, the implemented project reports and evaluations and assessments, the completed project reports of several of the, whatever you call them, development agencies. So I'm looking at the reports from the World Bank. They actually took me in and said they were mentoring me, okay? So I'm looking at their implemented project reports, how they assessed it in the beginning, what their plan was, who they were actually working with, if they had any success, how did that look like, how did it work out, who were they actually serving, and then the 10-year after report. So I'm looking at that for the Food and Agriculture Organization, the World Bank. I'm looking at that for USAID on some projects for the CG centers, you know. I'm in an organization also called World Neighbors. I think those were the primary ones that I was looking at. And each case I'm looking at over a span of like 30 years, what's happening with these small farmers? How are they with some studying like over a million small farmers all around the world and how these development agencies and what's happening and what's not happening. And I was able to develop sustainability indicators, you know, what would make a project sustainable? Sustainable not in the eyes so much as the economic benefit to the agency, but I'm looking at sustainability for the farmers and what in this design, in this project, in the training or assistance that they're given, would after the project has ended, for whatever reason it's ended, that will make the farmers still be successful. Okay,
yeah.
That's building capacity. You know, after you turn the door and you walk away and you stop the money, that whoever you're working with is still able to run, is still able to be successful, still able to meet the goals and aspirations that they have for their family and for their farm. So I looked at all these projects all around the world, and I'm just doing all this research, and then I do my dissertation. This is a story. I'm reporting before my committee all of this work and all of this that I've done. And at the end of my presentation, they stood up and clapped. And they said, "Jennifer, you could have only selected one." I can't believe it. They didn't tell me, okay? We selected one agency and done all that, but I selected all these agencies and tracked them and everything. And so, okay. So with that skill that I gained from that dissertation, I was able to gain insight on how to build capacity. In working with underserved farming populations, in working with what we call now socially disadvantaged farmers and their communities, are in working with minority farmers, I'm working with small farmers, period, or farmers, period. How to identify the needs and work together to develop solutions and whatever the training or the capacity building, whatever those avenues we can call it sustainability, because what we're doing is working in such a way that they have actually been able to engage in the learning and take it on as their own and use it, okay? And the change in the practices that enable change, okay? Yeah. So that's how I started working with farmers. And that's how I started working at Florida A&M University and developed their statewide small farm program.
So that program at Texas A&M was
Florida
A&M. I'm sorry, Florida A&M. Mm-hmm. I get mixed up with my son's track career. So at Florida A&M, that program was to work directly with farmers.
To work directly with farmers.
Yeah.
Specifically and uniquely with farmers, in that it has the flexibility to actively identify the needs of the farmers and work with the farmer to engage the farmer in their own capacity building, okay?
Yeah.
And it was broad enough, and it is broad enough, to look at the farmer not as a tool of agriculture, but to look at the farmer as a human being that has needs.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at you and I'm saying, what are you needing? What do you need? How can I help? And that farmer may say, you know what? I have farming down. I've heard this. I've got farming down. I don't need any help with farming. What I need help is I have hypertension, or I have diabetes, or my wife has diabetes, or my kids need mentoring and assistance and tutoring. you know, but I mean, I'm there for agriculture too. So, you know, I am going to tell them about organic farming systems and about this benefit and everything. But the need, the present need is what you're addressing. And then you can engage farmers in this additional avenue that we feel is the solution.
Okay, so it's helping to build an economic community, a successful economic community of small farmers who can actually make a living and actually address the needs of their lives. Have I got that right?
I would say a little bit broader than economic. Economic is one of the focus. However, it's about well-being and improving quality of life. And that economic part that walks with it. But it's essentially about engaging farmers, small farmers, all farmers, in this capacity building exercise, but focusing on well-being and quality of life, improving their livelihood, which would include the economic benefit as well.
Yeah.
But so, always at the foundation is organic farming systems, okay? Always at the foundation is organic agriculture. So we're looking at organic agriculture and the success of organic farming systems as a benefit to the farmer. So let's see how we can build on that, right?
Okay, so how did you come to believe that organic farming is important to the farmer, to the community? I can say that, you know, Georgia and Florida are not tremendous hotspots of organic farming traditionally. You know, when I talked to Jesse Bowie in Mississippi, he said, yeah, there aren't very many of us here. You know, he said the demand is growing, but the farming community is just developing. So how did you come to that?
That's a good question. I still would have to rely on the impact that my parents had, that they had a connection, a proven connection, they thought, of healthy eating, you know, good food, healthy eating directly from the farmers is essential to building healthy bodies, you know. And I probably took it a step further in looking at the aspect of building healthy farm environments and building healthy farms and starting from that point as well. Now, I can't really say any particular literature that I read or any particular conversation that I had that helped me to get to that point, but happy to be there.
Yeah. Did you start to become part of a network, part of a community, whether it was academic or farmers, where
institution, when I first started out sharing information with farmers about organic farming systems and organic agriculture, and previously it was called also sustainable agriculture when it was emphasizing organic, it wasn't so much accepted at all. It was more or less considered to be a hobby or a trend, you know, that farmers were engaged in our communities, were kind of tasting the water, so to speak, stepping in slightly. But what I was able to do is to connect the farmers to facilitators and to connect the university faculty with facilitators and training and information about organic agriculture persistently, continuously, you know. And the farmers were learning and the farmers were changing their practices and the farmers were connecting to the university, you know, verbally, which is a big thing. We're 1890, okay? So they're like connected to the university and they're connecting to this organic agriculture and the farmers themselves are seeing changes in their own production systems, okay? And they only have good words to say about it. So this was what was really influential at my university because of the support that the farmers gave to the program and the support that the farmers gave in their words. And when they talk to your dean, they're saying, you know, we like that organic agriculture kind of thing. This was the case for Florida A&M University. However, that was not the case for a lot of our sister universities. in Florida, okay, or outside of Florida, where they may struggle a little bit more with the concepts of organic agriculture being for everyone, and are the concepts of organic farming systems being sustainable at all. So the university allowed that flexibility for me to work and engage the farmers and the consumers in organic agriculture. And as I also brought in the teaching and the learning to the university this year as well.
So Jennifer, do you think that Florida A&M was different because you were being a champion and showing people what was possible? And they, I always think of it as the art of the possible. People go, oh, that is possible.
Yes.
Is it, do you think that's what happened? Is that you had a lot of passion and, you know, you had a lot of energy and people saw it?
I think you're right. And when I first started out, I was continually having workshops and training. I mean, like, every other week, I'm having a workshop, and I'm having an what we call intensive learning, where it's going to be at least one full day, 8 hours of learning intensive. I have food there. You're not leaving. I've got your water. I've got your food. I've got your, and I'm using organic food. Okay. I'm like, okay, this has got to be this way. We're talking about organic agriculture. It's going to be all organic. Okay. And the farmers are enjoying it, and they're like, this is, and they're for the first time, some of them are tasting organic food, you know, and then the faculty's coming in, and this is all organic, and it was a teaching and learning experience, you know? So I think it was that excitement of and the knowledge of the benefits of organic agriculture and what it can do, the possibility of what it can do for the farmers. Engaging them in what we call an alternative marketing strategy, you know, a value-added market strategy, okay? And the farmers could reap the benefits immediately, you know, and engaging the faculty in an alternative critical thinking experience where I'm engaging faculty in opportunities for the students to come out and visit the farms as well and learn from the farmers. I'm engaging the farmers in, okay, this is, we're gonna have farm tour and this is how we will have it, you know. We'll talk about your organic farming practices, your strategies. We'll talk about the benefits that it is to you. We'll talk about the benefits for your farm and for your customers, and provide information and strategies that equip the farmers and make them decision makers and leaders, you know, equip the farmers to have their own farm tours. And that then the term became agro-tourism, and, you know, and it's a big thing now, but we were doing it when it wasn't a big thing, okay? You know, like people say, Jennifer, you're gonna have people go out to the farm? What are you doing? What are you doing? But I would also invite my deans, okay? And they would come. They would come and they would see, and people would shake their hands. Thank you so much. This is so helpful for me. This has really been great. FAMU, you need to do more of these kinds of things. And it was always a positive experience and a remark and a positive comment coming from the farmers and the communities as we were growing together in this organic learning.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So it sounds like you really were able to, I don't know, change hearts and minds so that it became something that was accepted instead of, you know, I heard stories from some of the early scientists who started to get interested in organic. And I remember one of them, and he became the first soil scientist, I think, at Rodale. He had been at University of Maryland, and he said, oh my God, when I took that job, if I went back to the university, people would pass me in the hall and they'd look the other way like wow. I had betrayed science is how wow. they felt about
wow.
it.
Wow, yes.
And that's changed a lot from those yes. days, you know, yes. I know. But that's because people like you saying, you know what, we're not so scary.
Yeah, not so scary. And throughout all of the capacity building sessions, the teaching and the hands-on training and the technical assistance. That's how all of the workshop sessions went, okay? So at every session, I am infusing the farmers and the community with this learning and providing hands-on training and technical assistance for, like I told you, that an 8-day session, or an 8-hour session, or a 2-day session of complete learning, and the food is there and everything is there, so you're not moving, okay? So, yeah. But when they left, they got it. They knew how to go out and do whatever this thing is. They changed their practices because they were like infused in this environment of learning, okay? And they also, a part of it was a farm tour. So I'm having these workshops on farms, okay? And so then they got to see how this thing worked, you know? And so it was really, and still is, an exciting opportunity of integrated learning, you know? Not only information sharing, that alone won't help, but the hands-on training and the technical assistance is what really ties it all together. And that's why I saw the benefit in the increase in the farmers that were willing to change their practices, that were willing to engage in organic agriculture strategies, that were willing to share this information with their public, with their consumers, with their clienteles, and bring them to the farm to further reemphasize the importance and the benefit, you know, and make themselves, the farmers, as resources. I call them resources, like a resource, okay. Resources of good food, you know, of organic food. And to have that tie-in with the community is so important. So we got to see increases in numbers, and increases in impact of what the farmers were doing, you know, because of the capacity building strategies that we were using.
So do you see the number and the community of organic farmers just constantly growing and spreading down in Georgia and Florida?
I do.
That's great.
And you know what I see? I see an increase, not only in, we always think of the increase as being the youth increase, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, to see youth that are interested in high school and they're farming or doing something in agriculture, you know, and see those that maybe have gone to college or have not, but they have that youth on their side and they're engaged in organic agriculture, organic farming systems, strategies. It's so exciting. However, I'm also seeing a new youth, so to speak, a new beginning farmer, and that is in the farmers, the public who is retired. And they have decided to now start farming. And sometimes it is that they have farm land in from their family. Sometimes it is not. That's the case. However, they have that interest in, okay, I finished this career, but this is what I actually always wanted to do. So I'm seeing an increase in the engagement of seasoned, senior, retired folk.
Yes.
Taking on the banner, so to speak, for organic agriculture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm seeing that increase in both ends, and it's so exciting. And you know what else I'm seeing? I'm seeing a new joy about organic agriculture and the benefits of healthy living and healthy food and the benefit to the environment. I'm seeing this kind of rotating, holistic value being added to organic agriculture past the growing of the food, including the growing of the food, including the benefits on the farm and the farm environment and to the soil and all of that, but also the benefits to the environment and to the biodiversity, the benefits to our air, you know, the benefits to our the health of and well-being of the farm family and the farm worker. You know, this added benefit before it even gets to the consumer, you know? So I'm seeing more and more people are happy about all of these different, what I call organic pathways, and engaging in all of them and building a healthy community is what they're figuring on that they're building, and they are, but it's all on the basis of organic agriculture and organic farming systems.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. It one of the things I see, and you're talking about it, is when we start to dive in, it's like everything is connected. I mean, you know, climate and the environment and the water is all intimately tied into farming. And how do we farm? How do we grow our food?
It is so important. And another important aspect is access. And that's a term we, you know, everybody knows access. But I'm speaking of the benefit of organic agriculture and organic food to provide access to a healthy living and be inclusive of populations of folks, inclusive of Black, Indigenous, farmers of color and their communities, you know, inclusive of those farmers and their community, as well as Black, Indigenous, people of color in other communities. That the information that we learn and the benefits of organic agriculture is a shared learning and a shared technology and a shared message, you know, that has benefits for all.
Yeah.
And I see it coming to play again when we think about urban living and the options that we give urban citizens, I feel, needs to be upped. We need to up that game and give them the option of urban living via organic urban living, okay? Where we are actually coming in and we're using cover crops and crops to remediate the soil and improve that environment and give them green spaces. If it's just pollinator habitats or if it's in increasing and building healthy soils, we're talking about building healthy soils in urban spaces. And growing healthy plants in urban spaces and not providing only the alternative technology of different kinds of soilless systems because we say they're in an urban environment or they're minority communities. And so this is, I think that's a way that we don't want to go. We want to provide the option for clean, healthy green space, clean, healthy soils, and building those soils and using programs such as the NRCS and their support of urban environments and to transform and build in healthy soil environments in urban neighborhoods. And just as we do in rural neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely. I read some, I can't even think where I read it last, but some really interesting stuff about the healing qualities of being in a plant-rich atmosphere, you know, environment, and both for you physically and also emotionally, that you know, you're depressed if there's nothing green growing around you and you're getting those good microbes coming out.
I've read some information about the same thing, especially the emphasis was not only on the gardening, on the farming, but it was focusing on small farms and small spaces and garden kind of spaces, but also on the aspect of in those spaces you're using organic systems or you're using natural systems, you know, they wanted to say natural systems, okay. But that emphasis in building that healthy kind of environment, along with the growing of the soil and the growing of the healthy plants, you know, and along with engaging in healthier eating habits. But you're building a healthy environment in urban spaces, right?
Yeah, our very important.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, so you've got the benefits to the everybody because they're around plants.
Right.
You got people growing food and you got people getting access to food. And, you know, obviously that's a big thing right now.
Yeah, it is.
Paul Hawken pointed out interestingly that, you know, we have terrible food deserts in cities. He said, we also have terrible food deserts in Kansas where all the small farms have been wiped out and you go to the store, you can't get good food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's something to work on. So tell me, how did you take that step to also become a farmer again from being a teacher, a professor, working with all these farmers, how did you make the decision that you were going to farm?
So I wanted to practice some of this that I'm teaching, okay? I'm talking to farmers. I'm showing them this would be a better way. You know, I'm using organic agriculture and organic farming systems as a foundation for all of the teaching and the learning that I'm doing, okay? And sharing with farmers and their communities. And I wanted to practice this myself, you know? My grandmother has this farm of which it had laid fallow for over 20 years. And so that provided an excellent opportunity for me to get started. And to get started an organic farmer in that, because the land had laid fallow and we were able to just start off with a certifier, you know, and get things straight from the beginning, you know, so to speak. So we are the only certified organic farm in our county and in surrounding counties, and we hold capacity building workshops and trainings from the farm. And it's such a wonderful experience because people are able to come to this low-tech farm, and the vast majority of the work we still use hand tools to do. They can get the vision of the success and the joy of farming. And so we try to share that information, the principles of organic agriculture, love that information to share with folks. And information, of course, about the benefits of organic farming systems and those strategies.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. So how many years have you been doing that at Lola's Organic Farm? Yes.
So we could still be beginning farmers, okay? We're like 10 years of organic farming. Yeah. So not a long time.
No, that's wonderful. And to be able to go back to your grandmother's land. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So I first met you in Stowe, Vermont, when you were on the National Organic Standards Board. Yeah. You were in the middle of your 5-year term. Mm-hmm. And what was that like for you, being on the NOSB?
Well, it was a totally new experience. I did not know much about the board, okay, or the organic program. But I was given this opportunity to apply for the board, you know, and I looked it up and read and said, okay, this looks interesting. I think I might be able to contribute in some way in this. And so I completed the application process, but was so happy to be chosen to participate. And what I thought I found was, one, the importance of organic farming systems, the strategy and management system. You know, to me, it always comes back to that. But what I also found were missing parts of the message that farmers needed to hear and be skilled in, to encourage their practices, changes that they needed to take. Like, for example, after going to some meetings, I felt it was really important for farmers to regain the experience of seed saving. Okay, this is really important. It's important to save these seeds, you know, and to know the different techniques in seed saving. So, and also to learn cultural management strategies to promote and build healthy soils. And not only feel that the amendment substitution, so to speak, is the route to go. that's an option for you if you want to go that way in organic agriculture. However, I would teach and equip farmers in other techniques in organic agroecology strategy, same thing as organic farming system strategy. Okay. The importance of learning more about contamination. Contamination from off-farm sources. And how important that was to share the information with farmers to make them aware and more aware of their neighbors' practices. These are farmers using organic farming strategies, make them more aware of how their neighbors are farming. Okay. That particular sharing of information became important also with the faculty members. Had several workshops with Dr. Huber, you know him?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. I brought him on campus and took him to the classrooms. And he was teaching the students and the faculty and great with the farming community and everything. Just took him all around. But at any rate, being able to share that kind of information to equip the farming population, I thought was a major role, along with voting, I felt always, to support organic integrity and the strength of the label.
Yeah. You know, when I met you in Stowe, Vermont, we had our first farmer rally at Stowe. And I don't know, there were about 50 farmers, and we walked around the block with 5 tractors, and we had a gathering, and we had Elliot Coleman and Pete and a few people get up and stand on a compost pile and talk. And you came up to me afterwards. We were all eating pizza and drinking cider. Do you remember what you said to me at that? Because I remember very well.
I was trying to encourage you on, because I could see how important this was, and I could see your role in pushing it forward. And it was even to me, and I knew you knew the importance of it, but to me it was even bigger than what you knew at that moment, but I'm sure you were there. Okay. I was the one that was, but I wanted to share that with you. I wanted you to know that this was so important and so critical, and to keep moving with it.
Yeah, yeah. You looked at me, you looked me right in the eye, and you said, you've got to stay strong, mm-hmm. and you've got to represent. Mm-hmm. And then you said, even when you're alone in the room with them, you've got to stay strong.
Right, wow.
And I thought, oh, I had chills down my spine, Jennifer. I thought, who does she think I am, you know? And, but you know what? Probably 2 years later, I was on a USDA task force.
Wow.
And at the end of the task force, we were in San Diego, was studying hydroponics and organic. Mm-hmm. And there were, I don't know, 15 of us. And we went around at the very last gathering and said, how was this for you? Mm-hmm. And I was the last person. Everyone said, this was great. And I thought this was very productive. And it came to me, and your words were in my mind. And I thought, I'm going to have to tell the truth here. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm very depressed, mm-hmm. because I see a schism here, mm-hmm. a division, and we aren't going to get around it. This is going to be like a civil war. There's no way around it. And here's what's interesting. After I said that, several people came up to me and said, thank you so much for saying that. I wanted to say that, but I felt intimidated or whatever.
Yes.
And I, you know, it was your words actually that made me go, well, no, it's important to say the truth, even when it's uncomfortable.
Wow. 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 Yes.
So thank you.
Yes. You're so welcome. So welcome. Yes. And that's how I felt on the board though, you know, that the stand that I was taking a lot of times might've been the only one on the board, you know, or maybe amongst 2 or 3 others, but we were the ones that were making that stand for the integrity of organic agriculture, for the benefit of the farmers and the consumers, you know? So that I felt that way too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I could see it was lonely up there sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to a bunch of meetings after that because we were trying to reform the USDA. And I feel like we failed pretty badly. But we didn't fail because we created a movement. We brought a lot of people together. We found each other. But we did fail to change, yes, change the position, yes, of the USDA.
Yes, yes. And somehow, you know, you have to build your own movement, you know, and bring the change that you want to see with you. And I think that's what the Real Organic Project is doing and has done. You know, the vision and the change and the strength of the organic integrity of the label is represented in Real Organic Project. And it's not there anymore, unfortunately. We want it to be there. I mean, you know, to a certain point, you always want to say, you want to end up saying something is there, something is there, but not that total strength and not that total vision and not that total equipping of the farmers, our care of the farmers, of the organic farmers, is not there, you know? I often would say when I was on the board, they don't care about the farmers. It just dawned on me one day. It was like, they don't care about the farmers. And then I looked through the papers and there was nothing in the papers where I saw that would give them the authority to say, we care for the farmers. Like the USDA NRCS says, we care for the conservation of the land or the whatever. Okay, but USDA NOP doesn't say we care for the farmers and their organic farmers, you know? And I was so surprised to not be able to find that. And had there been such a statement, I think maybe we would not be viewed as adversaries sometimes when we want to say a truth for organic farming and for organic farmers.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you were one of probably 60 farmers who went to the Jacksonville, Florida NOSB meeting where they had the big showdown around hydroponics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was pretty wonderful to have all those farmers from all over the country come and from all different kinds of farming come and testify. And they really were trying to keep the integrity in the program. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We didn't sway the board, did we? But we had our Soil 7. Mm-hmm. And they were great. So after that meeting, the Real Organic Project was formed.
Yes.
And you became one of our first farms, but you also became one of our first standards board members. Poor you, you just get off one standards board and we drafted you for another one. Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Thank you.
Yeah, we got a lot of NOSB members who have joined the Real Organic Project. It's a wonderful thing. So what's it been like for you working with Real Organic Project? Are you hopeful? Do you think that we're making progress?
I do. I feel that you're making progress. I feel hopeful for the future of organic agriculture. Hopeful for the benefits that the customers believe that they are receiving from organic agriculture, you know? It's those benefits are within the Real Organic Project seal. And it's unfortunate that it's worked its way out that way, you know, that it's true that the organic seal on its own needs an additional assistance, you know? But that's what we are providing. The vision and the strength and the will of real organic farmers to farm in a real organic methods and strategies that support organic farming systems and those benefits to the environment. And those are the benefits also that customers are aware of and that customers are looking for. And those are the benefits that impact local and global environments and local and global communities.
Yeah. So do you think we can succeed? Do you think we can pull this off?
We are succeeding. Yeah, right now, today. Right now, yesterday, we're already succeeding. Yes, yes, this is a movement. And this is a movement of truth in product, okay? Truth in actions and practices. And it is successful. And it has gained momentum. And the practices engage other farmers to participate as well, you know? So it is a growing movement.
Well, thank you. Is there any last thing you'd like to say before we close? This has been such a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave. Such an honor to talk with you and such an honor to serve on the standards board of the Real Organic Project. And I just encourage you to continue in your vision and continue in the strength and that we work together to even give you more strength and engage farmers all around the world in what the Real Organic Project represents and the benefits to our communities.
Jennifer Taylor, thank you very, very much for talking with me today. It is a pleasure. All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Real Organic Podcast. We hope that you'll subscribe, tell your friends, and leave us a rating and review. A video version of this interview, as well as the full transcript with links related to our conversation, can be found at realorganicproject.org/episode40. Please join us next time when our guest is real organic farmer Ben Dobson of Stonehouse Farm and Hudson Carbon. Ben gave us one of the best explanations about the carbon cycle and the nitrogen cycle, and how concentrated animal feeding operations degrade the planet. You won't want to miss this educational episode next Tuesday. To find a real organic farm near you, visit realorganicproject.org/farms.